Blog Talk Radio.
The bloom, the swoon, the sugar's on your block. The planets let them flash in the corners of New York. The ghetto, the meadow, the Mr. Butterflew. The honey bugs dug and licked the honeydew. The sun, the kiss, the funk for a bit. The lips with the soul and some jazz for your hip. The puff, the buzz, the lids be heavy slick. The mecca get a rush when the beats be very thick. The hands, the feet, the brown baby treat. The femmes fumble loose and drink the doodle juice. The steps, the flams, the planets got damp. The people get a grip with the tape from a jam. A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Uh-huh, a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. The big, the fat, the cool, cool cats. The psychedelic soul puts the planets on the map. The chic, the love, the far out name. The lack of the funk's the main, why we came. The boogie gets done, the colors won't run. The funk hits the square, the kids gotta come. The pizza with the pop, the West Wharf stop. The crew after crew that do the grasshop. The true cool is black, the new school is fat. The beats by the ounce, the funk by the pack. The groove is the fix, the jitterbug fix. The hanging off the butts with the fat soul kicks. That's my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
I said a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Oh, a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
The wide, the hip, dig it, it's the trip. The loops, the scene, and the funkifying it. The sounds, the pounds, the stacks, the flares. The baggy, baggy jeans, the naughty, naughty hair. The twinkle in the eye, the kisses living fly. The crew from the sky, the stuff to get you high. The action, the work for the rhyme. We goes the whole nine. The papers won't rot, the vapors get got. The streets get the buzz, the funk off your block. The opium groove, the smacked out soul. The kicking it live, the fat gotta roll. With my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk.
Yeah, it's a nickel bag of funk, a nick bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Nickel bag, a nickel bag. Ladybugger hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Butterfly hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Doodlebugger hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. DP's always hit you with a nickel bag.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Headliners Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's catalog of work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night poet callers. I am your host, Jeremy F., and I am joined, as always, by my lovely co-host, Pam Ray, who... if you were lucky enough to visit her alma mater, the hallowed halls of the Swift Creek Sailors, you would see that her records for long jump, high jump, and pole vault still stand to this day. Pam, how are you?
Well, you know, I'm pretty sore and tired from all that jumping, but, you know, other than that, I am pretty darn good. I'm here with my nickel bag of funk and my ice water, so, you know. Life is good.
Perfect, perfect. We have a special show. I'm doing great. I'm happy. I'm excited for tonight because tonight, you, my dear, are actually one of our headliners, and I can't wait to dive into your work. Before we do, who else do we have joining us tonight?
We have Jeff 1969, and welcome, Jeff. Glad you could join us.
Yeah, no, great to be here, guys. Thanks for having me. Thanks for reaching out, Jeremy. It's a real honor.
Well, Jeff, I know that we're excited to read your – I don't want to belittle your work. We're excited to dive into you, too. But as always, we're going to go ladies first. So for the first hour, I am going to go ahead and post Pam's first poem so she can begin. If everyone's ready.
Awesome.
All right. All right. Well, I decided I should include at least one sensual rite, so I chose this one. And it's technically untitled. It goes like this. I stretch and sigh contentment's purr. Sleepy senses awakens to thoughts of you, lingered memories of our past encounters, incites urgent cravings to be with you again. I hold you in my firm, wanting grasp, breathing in the rushed steam of your intoxicating aroma. Parted lips and tip of tongue eagerly trace the heat of your smooth, hard rim, liquid pleasure burning my impatient mouth, eager to swallow and taste you. You offer yourself to me, not an overly sweet, watered-down, synthetic-flavored version, but the real you, the you I want, crave, desire, dark, complex, intense, strong, bold, and hot, insanely hot. I finish you off smiling as you flow down to meet my demands. Droplets of you cling to the curved corners of my mouth, and as you still linger on my taste buds, I reach out begging for more, completely devoted to the transcendence of your tide, a slave to you, my addiction-stirred arousal, my cup of morning coffee. End poem.
I love it. I love it. And I beg to differ that this is going to be the only sensual words we hear from you tonight. Jeff, you want to start us off with some comments?
Yeah, that's. I just I read this one just before the show. This is awesome, Pam. You know, very few people can write poems like this and really hold my interest. But you're such a pro. I really like the closing stanza. I reach out begging for more, completely devoted to the transcendence of your tide. Like it's just great poetry. And I read it. I sent you a comment. It made me blush, and I'm too old to blush, but that still works. So well done. It's a great piece.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, and I'm with you, Jeff. I'm always blushing. No matter what, anytime we get into any kind of insinuation, innuendo, I'm blushing and stumbling over my words. And there's two ways, because, of course, I was hook, line, and sinker on this, Pam, right? The first time that I went through it, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is an incredibly sensual, erotic right, and then I went, oh, there's the kick at the end. The whole thing is about coffee. And then I went,
yep.
it is, and maybe it isn't. You know, I mean, I was so much sold on the sensuality of all of it that you could either say that, okay, that this was more of a tongue-in-cheek poem, and the whole time she was just kind of filling the reader's mind with thoughts of innuendo, and really she was talking about coffee the whole time. But, my dear, you could also take this as really, it is a sensual rite. And then at the very end, you're comparing the addiction to all the sensuality you have with this other person as frequented as your cup of morning coffee. So, haha on that one. I took it both ways. What I wanted to know from you on this, and I have a litany of deeper questions for you about your whole – everything that you do for both AP and your process. So let's start off with this. You spend so much effort, so much time, so much dedication to AP, yet you still seem to find a lot of time to write and put together great poems such as this one. I kind of want to know, and you've alluded to this to me before, but I want you to go a little more in depth. What is your day like? When do you find time to write, and when do you find that you're getting the most inspiration to actually sit down and put together words?
Oh, well, geez. Most of the time I find time to write by ignoring my children and being antisocial. But, you know, in all seriousness, no. So you make time. Anything that's important to you, like, you know how you hear people say if a relationship is important to you, if a marriage is important to you, or a job is whatever, you'll make time for it. If poetry is important to you, you'll make time. You know, you still have other things in real life. I always tell people, you know, friends and family, real life comes first, you know, whenever they apologize. Sorry I couldn't write. Sorry I couldn't do this, you know, like be on a show. And it's like, no problem. Family comes first. But, you know, if something is important to you and poetry is important to me, you'll make time for it. And so that's what I do. Wherever I can find time in my day, even if it doesn't mean writing a whole poem in one sitting, I'll find time to write.
I really like that answer because that's true. I mean, I totally subscribe to that same kind of mentality. There's always time if you make time. So great answer, Pam. Your next poem, Derailed, is available whenever you are.
All right. All right. And this is Derailed, and it goes like this. You scramble my eggs with your Sir Mix-a-Lot style dance moves, orgasmic deluge of dripping yolk flung against the grease-stained walls of human existence, going full speed ahead on a torn-up track of mind-numbing piece of shit sex, piling the coal in the burner like Legos on the floor, scattered-brained, choking on laughter, loathing and cum, rolling over a missing piece of track, flying sideways, upside down, tumbling in space like an astronaut chugging the last golden drop of lust-laced tang, pain that rips open the loins and makes the heart bleed, drip, 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 catch it on my tongue like snowflakes laced with dirt, shivering, delicious and maddening, trying to stand on legs shaking like a politician during election year, toss my hair, a dog just out of the deep end of a pool, craze-filled eyes, cracked, stained lips, cheap souvenirs of grass-tossed smut. I spit you out and moan, ready for another fast-paced, hell-bent ride of derailed love and late-night breakfast. End poem.
See, I told you we weren't done with sensuality out of you yet. And I love this because it's sensual and it drives you in with all of that passion. In a lot of ways, the heart of poetry, right? Because when you use the word poetry, you always think that everyone's going to be writing lovey-dovey, passionate poems. But this, you did some subtle moves in this that makes it not all rainbows and unicorns. It's very real. The Legos on the floor, the legs that are still shaking, it's showing that the passion is real in a real world, I guess is what I liked about this. And in terms of how you took it and took each stanza and then made each one congruent with the whole theme of the poem, but you went on little tangents of theme that I really liked, especially the one that I liked the most was the third, where you're tumbling into space and then you close it with the nod to Tang. And I think that's real clever on how it all carried through in that vein. So I really enjoy this one. And I think by making sensuality relatable, palatable is not the word, but relatable, makes it all the more real and it makes it all the more true to all of us. And so I really appreciated that poem for those aspects of it. So in talking more about, I see that you take, what I like about when you throw up rights, I see a whole litany of different experimentations out of your pen. You're not afraid to use different voice, different tone, different subject matter, and even different format in what you put together. So when you go with more about your process, kind of to dovetail on my earlier question, where do you find your muse? When you sit down with that pen and pad, where are you looking to go? Do you have a vision ahead of time? Do you have things that you're...
This one was based after a prompt. It was inspired by a poem, You Let the Phallus Stand Before You by Rolling Stone. So oftentimes I do tend to write to prompts. I remember one time saying to a friend, he asked me if I was writing yet for a contest. And I said, well, I'm at the non-word part of my writing. And he was like, what the fuck are you talking about, Pam? The non-word part of your writing. And I said, that's where I close my eyes and basically I just meditate. I let all thoughts go out and let new ones come in. And I know it sounds really weird, but, you know, there's the non-word part. There's this thing there in the silence. You know, after, of course, you know, looking at the prompt and reading it over and over again, and then you sit there quietly, and then, you know, you just start letting things flow out. And then after letting things flow out, and this is the most important part, you freaking edit. Like, one thing I do, I will honestly say, I don't like about this poem, and I wish I'd edited before the show, is that when I first started getting back into writing poetry, on all poetry, I was horrible, in my opinion, about overuse of comma and periods. I very much believe that, you know, that in that process of letting, you know, the silence speak to you, and then going from that to the editing of whatever came out.
I love that. I think it's totally true. I can totally relate to that. But finding the silence. Finding the silence in your day, that's the gold nugget. It seems to be so elusive.
Oh, yes. At one point, I had four little kids in my house, and there was not a whole lot of finding of silence. Oh, by the way, I want to let you know that Victoria has joined us.
Yeah, I saw that. Hey, Victoria, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm going to warn you guys. I wanted to be here. I saw Pam's poem was posted, and so I was like, dang it, I got to be there. So my husband is actually here driving the car, and I'm talking to you guys as we make our way home. So if there's some background noise, I apologize, but I definitely wanted to make sure I was here. So it will get quieter, but I appreciate you adjusting to the chaos as I call from a car.
I didn't know you were gonna be bringing a ringer in tonight. Did your husband want to comment on the poem?
I don't think he's
going to
comment, but he can't say hi. Hold on a sec. Baby, say hi.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Vic, do you want to weigh in on this?
Poetry is not his forte, and this is definitely not one that he wants to. Not the first one he would probably want to make a comment on, but would it be okay if I took a moment to kind of express my thoughts on it?
Absolutely. Go for it. Yeah.
So I have to say what I really love about this. And first, I want to say that, you know, Pam, you talked about how you have this moment where you just clear your mind and you just meditate on it. Because I know that, you know, you joined me on my show way back when I was doing the Black Lace Diaries. And it's, you know, it's about kinks and that kind of a community. And I know that that's not always necessarily the experience that you've had. Not that it's bad. It's just, you know, Pam, to my knowledge, does not want to be tied up. Maybe she does, and she hasn't shared it. But this is one of those times that I'm always impressed with Pam because, you know, she is able to portray something that even if she hasn't experienced it or even if it's not really what her character is, she's able to form these characters in her mind so vividly that they create these fantastic experience and words. And what strikes me about this poem is that you can have love and romance and sensuality. We like to think of sensuality as being a little bit more difficult, delicate, but it doesn't always have to be. And this doesn't necessarily feel like someone making love to each other. It feels like a little bit of rough and tumble. And especially knowing that there's this rock kind of inspiration behind it, the idea that you said, pain that rips open the loins and makes the heart bleed, drip, drip, drip. It makes me think of those times when, you know, maybe you're hurt or maybe you're working out an emotion and you don't really want to get the heart involved. Maybe it's about making something else drip rather than feeling that pain, the frustration and the hurt that you've gone through. You know, it could be a little bit of a post-breakup fun with a stranger just to get over it. It could be a little bit of anger. It could just be the desire that this isn't about expressing an emotion and more filling a need. And so I love this poem for that sense. It feels rough and tumbled, and yet it's also fun as we have those little ideas of you scrambled my eggs with your Sir Mix-a-Lot style dance moves, which just really, again, puts you in that fun headspace. And then, of course, the idea of a dog in heat, kind of just being out in the grass and getting what it needs done, playing into that further, leaving it, with an idea of breakfast after you start it with some scrambled eggs. It's, I always love the cleverness of your rights. And that was going to be my original question is, whether you've experienced it or not, you know, how do you find yourself being able to write from these points of views that, you know, some people don't even aren't even able to get into the headspace because they haven't experienced it. They don't want to think about it. You know, how have you grown your talent to create those characters, be it from personal experience or just that imagination?
Well, you know, what you either write what you know or you research extensively. Like, I have written poems with, as we mentioned, a BDSM flair, you know, but it's not really my cup of tea. But I will tell you, I have been on a few different BDSM websites in order to get information to write. You know, and sometimes you just have to go with, like, there's certain things you can't research necessarily, but between research, writing what you know, and then just, you know, taking, I guess just going with the idea of asking yourself, how would I feel in this situation? You know, like, how would I feel if I was really angry at someone, but at the same time attracted to them with this lust that just tore me apart, you know, and then you just put yourself in that headspace. I hope that answered the question all right.
It does. It does. But I also think that that's an amazing testament because there, and it's not a detraction from anybody else who's not able to do that. But I've met plenty of people who the thought of, for example, being tied up, it strikes them in a way that they are not able to envision that. And I just want to say that I think it is beautiful that you are able to allow your mind to explore those spaces, whether it's something you want to experience or never want to experience or might even cause, you know, hit on your own personal traumas, because we all have our own personal traumas. Not saying that's one of yours, but I think it is a beautiful thing that you are willing to explore that in the headspace outside of your own thoughts, feelings, and emotions to create these vivid characters, because I think that is unique to you, and it shows in your work, your ability to imagine and feel and extrapolate on that. So, as always, Pam, just an amazing write.
Thank you.
Great comments, Vic. And for the record, if I'm ever caught on BDSM websites, it's for poetry research as well, just like Pam.
Jeremy, holy believable.
Jeff, what are your comments about this poem?
This is vintage Pam Ray for me. I just think your style really shines through here, Pam. It, you know, to me, this is just it's crazy, it's dirty, it's lusty, but it's in all that. It's beautiful. It's human. You know, you've got lots of animal imagery, you know, pain that rips open the loins, you know, toss my hair, a dog just out of the deep end of the pool. Like you're visiting this animal, this lower part of your brain in all this lust and sex. And I mean, it's in everyone. It's being human, right? So just the writing and some of the phrasing, flung against the grease-stained walls of human existence. That's awesome. I love that. Like that right there, like that sets the tone for the poem. Like this is going to be fun, but it's going to be dirty as well. We're going to get dirty. And
absolutely.
human beings are dirty and beautiful, and like just like this poem. So it's awesome.
Great comment, Jeff. We have your next poem on the board, Pam, whenever you are ready. Let me just hit the enter key.
All right.
There you go.
All right. You taught me. And it goes like this. You taught me to speak in an accent foreign to the left side of my tongue. Now you've disappeared into the woodshed carving keychains from yesterday's Yule logs. And I'm standing on street corners peddling old worlds from new cavities, a contact high from your smoke signal is lifting the hem of my dress, pausing to trace stretch marks stamped on that loose flesh above pubic bones, silver pink minnows trying to swim in the tipping of your hat. End poem.
I love this one. Victoria, you get to start us off this time.
Sorry, had to get myself off mute for this one. I think what's really beautiful is that we've gone from something that feels a little bit more rough and tumble to something that is far more intimate. And again, it just kind of shows the beauty and the breadth in which Pam is able to write. Sensuality can be expressed in so many ways. And as compared to maybe that quick, down, and dirty, this one feels intimate. It feels delicate. It's that opportunity of learning from a lover while also willing to teach. It's this person who has taught you perhaps a different love language that is not normal to you. It's reminded you how your beauty is not necessarily what you think it is. You know, it's those stretch marks, it's those life memories, it's those unique little contours that they appreciate that no one else has paid attention to. It just feels beautiful and intimate, and yet at the same time it gives this drowning feeling, because what you thought was worthy, what you thought was lovable to this person is something so much more, and there's so much more of you to love and to appreciate, and it can kind of leave you drowning. And so I'm amazingly impressed by this particular piece, because it captures beauty and delicate, and yet it can feel so overwhelming. And that, I think, is what scares some people about intimacy, in the sense that love and true desire can bring forth. It can feel overwhelming because, you know, I've given birth to two wonderful tiny balls of chaos. I've got the stretch marks to prove it, and I don't love them, but they have that special meaning. They have that story of life upon my body. And I know my husband appreciates it. And so this can have that overwhelming feeling of love and intimacy. And it's just so beautifully captured. I'm legitimately sitting here with goosebumps. And so I guess, you know, I'm sure Pam's going to tell me that yet again, she just imagined this in the heavens or something. But how do you find that you are able to grasp the depths of emotions that you often express in your poetry so vividly, regardless of whether you're using vast words or little words? How do you find that you connect with these emotions in this moment to portray them so vividly?
Well, I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I'm trying to think, sorry. Because, you know, the thing is, geez, I don't know. I mean, I do feel emotions.
Let me clarify. You write as if you are experiencing that emotion right then and there. It's always so vivid. And that's my question is I definitely have moments where I'm like, I'm going to write about love, but I'm not feeling very lovey. And I think it shows. And yet your works always have these bright, vivid, vibrant emotions that you are portraying. So, sorry, I should clarify. I don't think that you're emotionless, Pam. I'm just amazed at how vividly you always capture emotion.
I was a little confused if you were asking me how I could possibly, you know, portray emotions when I'm such a cold-hearted bitch.
That's my question. That's my dibs on that question.
Yes? Sorry. I honestly don't know. I really get into poems. There's, like, I can usually, very rarely, can I write two poems a day. It does occasionally happen, especially if they're completely different tones. Like, if I write a dark poem, a really sad, angry poem, it'll be guaranteed that I won't be able to write a sensual poem, because I don't know how I do it. I'll be honest with that. I don't know how I do it, but I am really able to get myself emotionally into a piece. The problem is that I will spend quite a while in the day not being able to get myself emotionally out of a piece in order to move on to a different thought, like, you know, a different way of feeling. So,
yeah. That I think that's a real testament to how deeply you, just like you said, how deeply you dive into that headspace to write the words you do. And I have to say, you know, it's a beautiful thing, because other people can talk about love, and there's people who are early on in their writing, and there's people who have been writing for years who struggle to show intimacy the way that you did even in this poem. But you really seems to be just natural for your writing. And so I just want to commend that.
Thank you.
Great comment, Victoria. Great comment. Jeff, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is great. It is such a shift, and that's what I enjoy about your writing. You're always writing something different, right? So this is, to me, the metaphor is here just, they're just marks. They're paint splashes on a wall, just, and I think this is a lot more visceral in your emotions in painting these metaphors into your poetry. I see a lot of love in this poem. You know, I see a bit of heartache. You know, now you've disappeared into the woodshed, carving keychains from yesterday's Yule logs. So there's a bit of heartache there, but regardless of the heartache, there's the love that endures, and the memory, and the sense of family. That's what I read in the last two stanzas. That's where family comes from, and that's where family is bound, right? So it's a beautiful poem. And I don't know if you want to comment on this, but I think this one should be close to your heart.
It is. Thank you very much.
Great comments, Jeff. Great analysis. And for me, for the last poem, which kind of represented more mature love, this one was earlier on in life, obviously with the title You Taught Me. But it was also what I like to call a hot rod poem, because it increased in intensity as we progressed through the poem. You start off, I love the opening stanza, where you taught me how to speak with an accent, with the left side of my tongue. I love that, because I'm so enthralled by the thought of accents and the movement of mouth and the sound of words and all that. So I like how it starts out, that early teaching on, and it insinuates on how to kiss. And then you become, I use the metaphor of a hot rod poem, because the intensity and the maturity and the intimacy seems to grow as the poem progresses. And it becomes more and more erotic for me if you try to understand the metaphors that you're trying to create here. And I really, really enjoyed this one. And I like that Jeff picked up that this one should be something very tender for you, or a moment. It's inspired by a moment in your life that you still hold dear later in life. And I think that's really cool. And I wouldn't have even thought to say that, Jeff, or even pick up on that until you said that. So it was a very cool comment. So I'm going to ask you, Pam, the famous Pam Ray question that happens at this time halfway through. Tell me how you got started into writing poetry.
Oh, yes. How did I get started writing poetry? You know what? That is a really good question, and I'm not 100% sure. Now, I will tell you this. I started writing poetry at a really young age. However, and I may have mentioned this to you before, or at least I know I've mentioned it one or two times, I actually had my first seizure when I was 7 years old. Was in a coma for a few days, and then back in the 80s, seizure medication was hardcore stuff, because, you know, as many people know, I have epilepsy. And so basically my memory from 7 and under got wiped out. I have only one or two memories from below age 8. So I don't remember when I started writing poetry, but it must have been very young. But I remember being around 12 years old and my aunt finally buying me a couple of books that I could write poetry in, because, and my mother being so thankful to them, because I was constantly taking everything, every little piece of paper, anything I could find, and scribbling poetry lines. I didn't really become very serious about poetry. Like, it was always a love in my life, always something I was attracted to and wanted to do, but it really was all poetry that helped me to grow. When I got married and, it was a fresh relationship, but then it grew into a very abusive relationship. And my ex, who was my husband at the time, used to mock me for writing poetry. And so I put it aside. And then, of course, I ended up having a special child with autism. And so for the longest time, my poetry was put aside, which I know is more answering more than just the question you asked. But poetry has always been a part of my life. And I wish I could remember that aha moment, that moment that it clicked, but it has always been something. Like, I remember telling a friend one time, for all I know, for my seizure and before my first seizure and before going into a coma, I was meant to be an accountant. But my mind got fucked up and turned me into a poet. that's a little bit of an idea of it's the long answer of I don't know how I became a poet.
So wait. Is this the day that I learned why I love Pam so much?
Yes. You guys are both fellow accountants.
Yes.
All right, Pam, here is your opportunity before we go to the next one to do some selfless plugging. Can you tell us everywhere where we can find your work that may be published or even other shows that you host?
Well, you can, of course, find my work on All Poetry. I am in a couple of the late night poets anthologies, including the Into the Darkness one and and of course, as most people know, I host or co-host a couple different shows. I host Break On Through, and I co-host After Midnight with Rex and Pam. So, and definitely check out those Late Night Poets anthologies on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows.
There you go. There you go, everybody. Yes, I can attest that I've called into many shows, and I always enjoy calling in when Pam is hosting. She is a wonderful commenter and a wonderful host. With that, Pam, your next poem is available for your read.
All right. And this is Nailed, and it goes like this. There are secrets clinging to my hair follicles, black lice writhe under the microscope of a school nurse who makes me gargle a bathtub of salt water. Look here, I stare mesmerized, pursed lips passing judgment. Rinse and repeat, the elders say, the chemical burn is cleansing like holy water. I wished for detachable breasts hanging on hinges, and a red stain that could be folded away in a tackle box with fishing lures that makes young palms bleed. I want to taste men, but my grandmother said, men are shot glasses of turpentine created to burn your throat. I tried to hide from them. Grandmother said, you cannot hide from men because you smell too much like the stench of sex and raw meat. I wonder if the school nurse and the dying lice read my thoughts, recognizing the erotic nature of crooked Picasso paintings that are nailed to me. End poem.
Oh, what a wonderful ride. Jeff, you're up first, please.
That's awesome, pal. What a powerful ending. Holy. Yeah, that's a fantastic, totally professional ending, in my opinion. You know, again, the when I read your poetry, Pam, it's you really mix the you know, you really mix an innocent piece in you that that you always throw in there. There's a hopeful, innocent piece in there, and you know, this the dashing of that in this poem is just really powerful, and yeah. Sorry, it's not the greatest comment. You know, the end where, you know, the crooked Picasso paintings, you know, that's how we end up with it's a great metaphor. That's how we end up when these people come into our lives and turn us against ourselves. You know, we become fractured and broken, and yeah, just a great poem, Pam.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate you and your comments.
Yeah, love the dialogue with your grandmother. You know, how the elders in our life tried to teach us, you know, sometimes good stuff, but a lot of the times it was garbage. So yeah, just heartbreaking piece, but a fantastic slice of life and a glimpse into the pain that makes us who we are sometimes.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And Pam, in reading your set list, I mean, you were given the opportunity to pick out of your whole catalog, and I was really surprised at how much you really hit on, at least with the first couple that we've gone on, is this sensuality piece. And I never paid as much, because you don't focus on that. You are very diverse in everything that you do and all your poems. But the fact that you chose these sensual poems, but you went at it from totally different angles. And what I've learned more and more, because I'm going to make the callous assumption that if you're going to pick a certain amount of poems to share with us tonight, you're going to pick something that means something a lot to you personally, that you want to share and you want to express and focus. And the voice that you've had up to this moment, to these first four that we've had, I really appreciate how strong you are as a person in yourself. And the best way I can describe it, you made some comments on a show either last week or the week before that were very poignant. But what you have here in the fourth, in the fifth, you're saying you're understanding what it is to be a woman, and I feel a lot of strength out of how you tackle it and how you address it. And you almost address it in the opposite way, right, by saying, I wish I wasn't this way. But identifying that and knowing your voice, and I think a lot of what Victoria has complimented you on is your ability to put yourself in that headspace of whatever emotion you're trying to capture. And that's definitely true on this one. I think it's very clever, of course. Things we've already said before, you say nailed, you go to the Picasso at the end. That makes for a wonderful poem. But the underlying feel that I get from your poetry, the more I appreciate it, the more I read it, especially tonight, is your sense of a person, your sense as a person, as who you are, and that inner strength to be able to convey what you want to convey through the vehicle of poetry. I mean, I commend you, and you already know that I'm a fan, and I'm glad we're highlighting you tonight, because it's definitely bringing that even more so to the forefront of my mind. So with all of that said, quick little story. When I got into poetry, everyone was giving me poetry books. When I started saying I read poetry all the time, one time I got a poetry book by Garrison Keillor. It was just called Good Poems. And I thought, how ridiculous is that? Who says what is a good poem? And so it's all about famous poems by famous poets that we all know. But I think that's kind of a neat thing to be able to stand up and say. And because you spend so much time, so much of your effort evaluating, reading, celebrating other poets here on AP, what do you look for? How would you say, what strikes you? What are you looking for when you say, you know what, this is a good poem?
For me personally, and obviously, you know, as we've talked about, it's selective, but, you know, like when I tell people when I run my contest, you know, like, you know, I like metaphor and imagery. I like creativity. Like, don't give me something in language that's so straightforward. Like, today I went for a walk and I saw a bear. Okay, that's not poetry. That's a fucking text message, in my humble opinion. You know? And I'm sorry if that sounds critical. But, you know, I like imagery. I like metaphors. I like creativity. I like to see, like, if I see they've written to a particular prompt, I want to see a connection to the prompt, and yet I don't want the prompt just described. I don't want... You know, I don't want, I think I've repeated the word creativity more than once, but I want to see that. I also want to see that people have taken chances. And I know sometimes taking chances means running into poetry or not going to like, but honest to goodness, I would rather read a poem I don't 100% understand and be flabbergasted by the choice of imagery and be like, yes, I 100% understand this, and I'm pretty sure it has just put me in a coma. So that's what I look for in poetry.
That's cool.
I think that's a great answer. I think Vic had to step away for a second, so I think we're going to go ahead and jump. We're going to go ahead and jump to your next one then. It is posted and ready for you when you are.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. Pulped indifference, and it goes like this. We have become a nation of snapping turtles hiding in bone-laced corners with our stolen orgasms and our anger, waiting to strike to tear flesh into pieces of reformed madness, medicating those who dare to see lions jumping from rooftops. God forbid we run against the blade or ejaculate unpopular opinion upon the handle of the knife. I see the ugly shades of pulped indifference, individuality puked into the sewer drains of overly sterilized instruments, probing for someone to blame. Do you remember when sex meant something, when it was a worshipful ecstasy between lovers and strangers, when we hitchhiked across America, filling willing orifices like collection boxes for the poor and destitute, when tongues, fingers, and blue-veined cocks, pulsing nightlife between moist thighs, screaming with guttural joys of freedom. Nothing means anything anymore. Sex is simply a way to pass the time and help us forget. We want to forget. We beg to forget every misguided step we've taken to become the gardener's shit on the split hooves of squealing hogs, blaming everyone in history for our drowning except our own personal choices. Do you remember when it meant something to rage, our lonely, unimportant selves shared with the filth of society, when poetry was that deep cut in an endless sky, and we versed ourselves on the virile rhapsody of smoke-filled jazz rooms. Now Medusa has led her serpents across social media, and we have become the stone statues, wordlessly hanging ourselves upon the fanged gardens of shallow promises. Banquet hall whores and stock market pimps are now piled high against the wall of democracy, tangled together layers of dry-humping douchebaggery. We are imbeciles changing the stained sheets of grandiose wet dreams, spit-polish the looking glass, all that you want. The mind of conceit will never see its own limitations. Life has become catwalk struts of self-promotion, action, reaction, vulgar acts of violence, corner markets selling corruption to dirty the souls of children. We plan our eternity, but forget people already roasting in this hell. My dear friend, we hallucinate normality through electric buzzwords and clipped screens. Intellectual thought has been kicked in the groin, bruised, battered, and too fucking limp to impregnate mankind with the spirit of free thinking. End poem.
I love it. I love it. This is your beat poem. This is the dry humping douchebaggery. Who can ignore that, Pam? I love this one. But this is what I was talking about earlier. I mean, I like the fact that you are not afraid, and you and I have talked about this again before, where you are not afraid to dive into different styles. I mean, and this is your howl. This is your, like I said, this is your beat poem. This is your waving that freak flag, raging against the machine. And it's not political, Pam. It's a social commentary. And I think it works
so well, right?
That's right. And that's what it is, right? Because you could have written this, all joking aside, you could have written this in 1965. But it could also be a 2022 poem talking about dissatisfaction with the current younger generation. And I like that. And I like the conviction. I like the fact that the profanity is where it needs to be, the rawness is where it needs to be, and this thing beats that hippie drum that should be beating at the heart of all of us. I mean, I really did enjoy it. So my question
to follow up with that
is, who are your inspirations? Who are the greats? Who are the known poets that get your crank moving?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I didn't really start reading poetry until later in life, but it varies. You know, I do like the beat poets like Ginsberg, and, you know, I like Bukowski. But I also like Christina Roselli. I like William Blake. I could probably name so many of them in such a variety of styles that I like, from the romantic, you know, to the gritty. So those are just to name a few that I could think of off the top of my head.
Well, and that's fair. And I see that reflected in your work, because to say that you only had a certain genre of poet that you seem to follow or you seem to like isn't true, because I see that you're not afraid to go outside, color outside the lines, go outside the boundaries and explore new things. So the fact that you're pulling an inspiration from a larger pool of poets is totally understandable. But I did enjoy this ride. Jeff, your comments.
Yeah, this is totally an anthem to the beat poets here that I read, Pam. It's awesome. The I see a real nod to Ginsberg in the stanza when we hitchhiked across America. Tongues, fingers, and blue vein cocks. That's a real nod to Ginsberg that I see. I read this poem and I just go, hallelujah, thank you for saying it, really. you nailed it. People are half asleep when it comes to actually thinking about themselves and their own lives and their world these days. They're taking it in from somewhere else, and you know what? There's really fuck all to find out there. It's all in yourself, and it's all in going and exploring for yourself. Find out yourself. People don't do that
anymore.
So, you know, spit polish the looking all that you want. The mind of conceit will never see its own limitations. You know, we're conceited as children, and if you want to stay there, then you stay there.
Thank you.
Just love it. So
great comments. Pam, your next poem, Promises, is available and ready when you are.
All right. Promises. I promised myself I wouldn't write any more about love and sex and heartache. I also promised myself I wouldn't use the word sex in a poem, but metaphors of drunk bees pollinating the last sway of summer flowers have become fire ants in a colony of dried riverbeds. I am sick and tired of pretending the fire inside me is the gentle glow of an electric candle that won't burn fingers or set drawn curtains up in flames. I am sick and tired of people who tell me there's someone out there for everyone and I just need to step out of my front door to get laid. Mathematics, statistics, logistics, Jehovah Witnesses and UPS men delivering a monthly supply of, yes, your life is handprints on windows and dehydrated string cheese, snuggling the radiator, don't fit the equation. But I will be that jump up and down Red Cross volunteer, goth cheerleader, in the hard knocks of reality of life, raising my hand to say, when it comes to love and relationships, I don't know shit from Shinola, except this. When it comes to finding a man to open my shutters, I will settle for nothing less than someone who doesn't judge me for licking the neon orange chemicals off the chipped nail polished tips of my crooked fingers. Who knows, I prefer my Cheetos crunchy, a substance of bite, not that fluffy, puffy sway of air that disappears too fast to remember how good the taste was before you choked it down. A man who doesn't just accept but loves that I am the noisy, clumsy, blistered bump and grind of hot black coffee and deep conversations mixed with a two-cube snort of sugar laughter and cream. If you're not that man, fine with me, but remove your wherefore art thou tights from beneath my balcony, because I am perfectly capable of crashing a German alphabet of off-key singing into my own damn windows. And
oh my gosh. Oh, Jeff, you get to go first.
I had to mute myself because I started laughing through this poll. That's awesome, Pam. good for you. Good for you. Standing, you know, your poetry is, I honestly see you walking up to the podium. You know, you place your notes down and you tap the mic and you just go for it. So it's awesome. Like, maybe one day we'll see you read your poetry in person. That would be a real treat. This is great.
I prefer to keep my face on radio, but thank you.
Yeah, that's fine. But, yeah, I prefer, you know, the where was it? There was one line. It just kept but I will be that jump up and down Red Cross volunteer goth cheerleader. It's like I love your mind. I love how your mind comes up with these lines. It's just fantastic. So,
thank you.
No, just a great poem, and the you know, and sucking the chemicals off your fingers, Cheetos. Yeah, it's real. And who doesn't like Cheetos? Give me a break.
Yeah, right. Don't need those kind of negative people in your life.
No, I sat down with a couple of Oreos tonight. Rock on.
There you go.
Great comment. No, and that's where I picked up on this one. I mean, that's where this would really gain some speed for me, is after Accept This, which I thought was very – I always like the effect of doing a very short standalone line between stanzas. But you pick it up. When it comes to finding a man to open my shutters, I like the innuendo. It's nothing if he doesn't judge me for licking the neon orange chemicals off my chip nail polish of my crooked fingers. So it's saying, you know what, I'm a quirky gal, and if you can't accept me for what I am, then I'm moving on. And the fact that you went so detailed and this funky little off-pace nuance, that's incredibly endearing. I mean, that's what poetry is all about. And then you were sly enough to even carry that on to the next. And who knows, I prefer my Cheetos country, obviously with the play off of the orange coloring, and then you expand from there. And then the other part that really got me was, wherefore out thou tights from beneath my balcony. I mean, there's so much in this, and it's very much what I alluded to in the comments of your last poem. I mean, this has that strong, individual, self-assured voice that anyone that reads any voice that has this much power, conviction, let alone the creativity, let alone the poetic value. I mean, this could be This could be a heavy metal song. This could be a political speech because of only the conviction, Pam. I mean, that strength, that inner strength in this voice is moth to a flame for me. I mean, I really think that this one, I think it's a great one that you celebrated tonight because it is about being a woman. It is about being loved. It is all of that. But again, it's the underlying strength that people follow. And I don't know what else to say beyond that other than I'm really proud of the way that you choose to creatively express that strength that you found in yourself. I think it's a great poem.
Thank you, Jeremy. And thank you for the opportunity to be headlined tonight.
Well, of course. And let's dive into one more quick question of you then while we have a second. Do you ever – or how do you fight? What advice – you know what? How about this one? This is a great one that you had the other night. What advice would you give to other poets out there about how to hone their craft?
Be open-minded. I know everybody, you know, hates criticism, and obviously we don't want criticism given in rude ways. But, you know, like even if you don't want to hear people, like, you know, give constructive criticism – like you only want nice comments, be open-minded in reading other people's poetry and saying, you know, maybe that's something I could experiment with. Also, you know, definitely experiment. And, you know, as people have said before, read a lot of poetry and, you know, step outside of your box. It's so important not to get stuck in a box and say, this is how I'm going to write poetry for the rest of my life. And as I mentioned earlier, if you don't know it, research it and edit. Yeah. So that's all my advice, my little words of wisdom.
See, and what I took away from that again was don't be afraid to go to BDSM websites, everybody. It's all for research purposes.
Exactly. And if they ask, say that Pam Ray sent you and you'll get a 25% off discount.
Well, I'm sorry we couldn't get much further. Pam Ray is one of the most altruistic people here on All Poetry. She is incredibly talented. Often we forget that she produces her own work because she spends so much time celebrating the work of everyone else. I encourage everyone to at least check out the rest of her set list, if not dive into the rest of her work, because she's an incredible woman. She does wonderful work, and I am constantly at awe, not only with her commenting on other people, but what she creates herself. It has endless treasure in what you'll be able to find. So, Pam, thank you for joining us tonight. You did a great job, and thank you for sharing your poetry. Next up, the man with the plan, Jeff, 1969. We are ready for you, my friend. Your first poem is on the board. When you're ready to begin, we are ready to listen.
Okay, let me find it here. Okay, this is When God's Tired. Everything smells or smurs or purrs like that thing, you know, where her name when she goes there. Walking through the thing where you all said what you said, I'm tired. I asked her if she would like to go to bed. They all say that. They're all tryouts, and they'll keep on getting the thing try, and for sure the thing in a messy way, like it was all a mess. I bring her the stuffed dog she named Buster after the German shepherd she had as a child. Buster, who long ago stayed a week in the willows by the muddy North Saskatchewan after discovering a skunk. Buster, who protected her and walked her and my two aunts to school. They trundled through the deep prairie snow, scarves spun about their heads and teased into slits for eager, shining eyes. Buster would break the trail, leaving them in the last quarter before the school. I'd heard the story so many times, they had become my own. The history of my history, the childhood of a living God. He gently held Buster, who in this latest case was a tweed spaniel, with sand in his rump for a doorstop. I fed her the soft peaches in a cup and played Sinatra again for my phone as she tapped her foot with eyes closed. In the east window, Mount Paul rose up beyond the city. On its back, the beach lines of a glacial lake that once filled the intersecting valleys. A line was patiently carved every few hundred years and the lake would drop. Another line and another as the lake fell in stages before it vanished. At sundown, she is looking through the window, her eyes at half-mast now. The eastern sky broadcasts the falling sun back to us in vermilion and amber. Her sleepy eyes finding shelter through the window somewhere beyond the colors, the mountains. Somewhere inside the ever strange and novel rooms of her life descending. End poem.
Great, right? Great, right? Pam, you want to start us off?
Oh, absolutely. This is just amazing. Wonderful use of imagery. I really love how you write about what it's like to take care of an elderly parent, you know, especially an elderly parent that perhaps is going through Alzheimer's or dementia. You know, and I really like this all the way through, but especially the part where you write about Buster the dog, and you say, I had heard the story so many times, they had become my own, the history of my history, the childhood of a living God. You know, and there is something about the passing on of stories from generation to generation that builds a connection. And I like that you have that connection. And I noticed as I was reading your set list and as I've read your poetry before that it is very obvious that family is extremely important to you. And you can definitely see that your family is an inspiration. And what are some of the other things that inspire your poetry?
I think as you might know, I'm obviously inspired by nature, for one, just the world around us. You know, I don't really think I'm all that inspired by people, maybe lately in some of my writes, but I tend to escape in poetry and write about the natural world for the most part, but I wanted to write about my mom in this case. So, just people who mean a lot to me can obviously elicit a poem. People that don't, I tend not to think, I deal with people day in and day out. Yeah, the people I spend all day on the phone and dealing with people. So when it's, when it comes time to relax and kind of hide in my own dreamland, I tend to just write about the world I see around me.
That makes sense to me. Very cool.
And I like the way this was broken up, Jeff. I mean, prior to tonight, Pam brought you to me. Pam says you're a great artist. And so when you posted your set list, I was able to enjoy your poetry for the first time. And
thanks,
I was
Pam.
Blown away. No, I think you're a very talented poet. And I'm excited to have the opportunity to talk to you tonight because I think we're going to have some great conversation and you bring up some great stuff. What I liked about this one in particular is I read it as two separate voices almost, obviously. And you did that through the tool of the italics in the first and the third. And that you took a little bit more, for lack of a better word, poetic license. And you played a little bit more with the voice in it. And then in the second half or the bulk of the body of this, it was more autobiographical. I still think you were very, very deliberate with all of your word choicing, but I think you went more towards autobiographic heart in all of this, something that meant something, a memory that was very important to you, something that you could look back on and keep as a treasure. And I like that mix. I like the fact that you gave a little taste to your audience, but this is something really for you. It's a memory that you don't want to lose. It's a experience, even if it's not 100% autobiographical real, which to me, because of the detail, it feels like it is, which I'll fall hook, line, and sinker for. That's semantics at this point. The point being is that you took a story based off of something and made it shareable by bringing us in through a poetic website. And I think it was really cool. I mean, I like that combination. And I guess my question to you then is, when you're exploring your craft or enjoying poetry, tend to venture on beyond traditional formats? I mean, what are you looking for? What are you trying to create? What guides you in how you put together a poem?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I think I'm guided mostly by feeling. Honestly, I just try and feel my way through it. You know, this kind of started out as a story, and then for me, it just kind of turned into a bit of a moment. That's where the stanza about the glacial lakes, you know, I just saw that as an analogy of time. You know, I see it every day on the back of the mountains here in my hometown. You can see these flat lines ascending the mountain, and just, you know, I love looking at them, right? So, and I of all the time that goes past. So yeah, I think it was kind of a story, and I thought this would end up being longer, but it just kind of morphed in the end. The end of it was probably a little more like a poem than the beginning. Yeah, I honestly, guys, I start out on a poem and I don't know where it's going. 99% of I start out with a feeling and I just waiting and I edit lots.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair enough. I like that. I'm pulling up your next poem, excuse me. So it is ready to read when you're ready for it, Jeff.
Okay. September. I know September from the clouds. Summer's stranded afternoon puffs, edges blurred by cool combs of wind. They hang around turning golden purple at the end of day. Maybe they are teaching the leaves. Like a mother who stands over shows her child, it's okay to stay in the light long enough to see it go. It's okay to fall beneath the moon. Or maybe they are chameleons feeling their way over the broad river's lens, the fluid belly of bronze and indigo salmon walking home to autumn. But the wind would say they are simple travelers like us, gathering themselves from the waters of sleep, shouldering the day, moving together in evolving step, and sometimes they tarry, getting lost in a sunset in September. In poem.
You know, for me on this one, it was 100% talent. So when you think of, there's certain months for me that stick out because it's the time of the season that embodies change or is very poignant in the feel, the tone of that time of the year, especially when you live in an area that actually has seasons. You think about spring, you think about deep winter, you think about the fun of summer, and you think about fall. And this poem, when I read it the first time, it felt like September. I mean, I think the tone of what you captured here is 100% September. I don't know how else. It's a personal connection for me. I don't know how else to accentuate what I'm trying to say. But when I think about what September means, somehow, Jeff, somehow you got my brain, and I was going, hell yeah, that is September. And I really appreciated that. And
an awesome poem, Jeremy.
Yeah, no, I mean, one of the poets that we celebrated just last week, Self-Rising Mojo, he does a lot of environmental inspired poems about his surroundings, very much like what you're going to present tonight. And I was very much impressed with how you took metaphor, how you took the feeling, and much more so, I can't say it enough, it's tone. You get in the spirit of your surroundings in a very unique way, and you celebrate it. And so, I don't know. This one, I was very impressed by this poem because of those aspects of it. So with that being said, can you tell me a little bit more about your process? Like, are you going on daily walks where you're looking around in your surrounding and saying, oh, I need to write a poem about that? Or how is your process of writing poetry?
Yeah, I'm definitely nowhere near as prolific as Pam. I have a busy life. I work a lot and, you know, family and home stuff. And, but in between times, you know, when I'm driving, I'm staring at the sky. Like, I, at least 15 minutes a day. I watch the sky just because I'm weird, I guess. I just love it. You know, I'm a nature nut. I've been playing in the hills since I was a kid, fishing and camping and hiking and just spending time out in nature. And I just have a real connection. So, I hope that answers your question.
It absolutely does.
Yeah,
oh, I like
my answer definitely just comes from daydreaming, you know, daydreaming and looking at, I see a lot of beauty in the world whenever I look really hard at it. It's a pretty amazing place we're in.
Very true. Great comment. Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really appreciate and enjoy this one. You know, there's such a sense of, to me, within nature of spirituality. You know, I really like how you personify the clouds of September. I mean, I don't know if it's technically personification, but it feels like it is to me. And your great use of color, I really like where you compare the clouds to mothers watching over their children. And then, or maybe they are chameleons feeling their way over the broad river lens, the fluid belly of bronze and indigo salmon, walking home to autumn. You know, there's such a wonderful sense of paying attention to detail. And I see this was inspired by a Mary Oliver poem, which I can definitely see why you'd be inspired by her poetry, as she writes beautiful stuff about nature just the same as you do. And a question that Jeremy had asked me earlier is, do you have some classic poets that have been an inspiration to you?
Yeah, well, I definitely love Mary Oliver. I think she's fantastic, her poetry and even her essays on nature I find terribly inspiring. Self-Rising Mojo, love his work. For one, he's a fantastic poet. I'm sorry I missed his show, so I'll have to go back in the archives. As far as other poets, I mean, any poetry about nature tends to get me going, and more thoughtful poems on nature, not just I saw a butterfly land on a flower and I thought, oh, life is great, you know, that type of stuff. I mean, there's different, like, I think you were talking about that earlier, Pam, you know, there's different ways to say it that isn't a text message, right?
Exactly.
But in terms of other poets, I like all the classic poets. What's the guy's name? I had a stamp of him when I was a kid. Jefferson. What's his name?
Oh, God. I feel like I know who you're talking about, but can't quite say it.
Jefferson.
I think If Your Abs did a contest on him one time or twice.
Yeah.
If I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I like it when poets get lost in their own dream and they kind of come up with some little truth that we all feel but none of us have said before, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, 100%. I like that comment. You come up with a little truth that we've all felt but we've never had a way of putting it down in words. That's a really cool comment. I like that. And keep your eyes on the boards too. Daniel DeCino is giving you some shout out too. Jeff, he's saying it's a great poem, such a wonderful feel to it, very reflective, introspective, and thought provoking. Loved it. And with that, your next poem, Dream, is on the boards.
Okay, Dream. This is a rhymey one. A poet washed from a lonely tide, curled beneath a swaying palm, not knowing where he was or why, and fell into the ocean's song. And if the world should wander past, he thought on this till lost of time, then woke to hear the gulls and wind and waters breathing simple rhyme. Like birds, your lives will fly away, your memories sink in the sand. The suns will slip, the nights will drip, the seas will drink up all the land. Between each crest, a silent turn, between each stillness moves the earth. The trees, the hills, the river's path, all sands to stars, all death to birth. He dreamed under the swaying palm across to where the sky could reach, beyond the sea, beyond his eyes, and saw another lonely beach. And there a poet curled beneath another palm within the wind, beheld the sea in silent realm, and so he wrote a poem to him. Like you, I'm lost here by the sea, and day and night they follow me, the poems held in my memories of skies and rivers, hills and trees, of moons and love and lily fields, of morning cries of whippoorwills, the dawn cast on the fragrant pines, the lake in gentle evening lines. But waking, all is sea and sky, and time has fallen from the shelf, smashed into diamonds at my feet, a lonely poem within myself. He smiled and laid his pencil down and gazed again upon the sea. The stars became a sequined shroud and wrapped him in eternity. End poem.
I love this one. Pam, you get to go first.
Oh, yeah, this one is absolutely stunning. The rhyme and flow, the meter to it is spot on. Wonderful imagery. I always enjoy a good story poem in rhyme, and a story poem that seems to have a bit of a lesson in it. But the idea of, you know, sometimes we write poetry to connect with other people, you know, and this is just my thoughts on it, you know, like sometimes we write poetry to connect with other people, and sometimes we write poetry because we just need to tell it to ourselves. And I really like that, you know, I noticed like your first couple ones were more free verse, and this one is a very precise rhyme, you know, consistently the same rhyming pattern over and over, which is really cool. Question. Did you start out as a free verse poet and work your way into rhyme, or vice versa?
Yeah, I think my first few poems I wrote for myself did have a rhyme scheme for sure. And I think then I started reading, and I think it was Mary Oliver, and I read free verse and thought, wow, you could do anything. So that was, that was the start. But this, I think this was for a contest honoring Oak Blue 34, and I know he writes in rhyme a lot of the time, so it was just basically I just kind of wrapped myself and my own thoughts up in this and kind of presented it as, you know, here you go, here's in honor of you.
And it worked so well. That was really my takeaway from this one. I like rhyme when rhyme feels right, is the best way to put it. And this one does that for me. And after I read this one is when I went over to your little author note over to the right underneath your emblem, your name over to the right. And I saw that you said, I just learned what assonance really means, and I was disappointed. And it broke my heart, Jeff, because assonance is my favorite poetic tool. But I got the humor in that, too. I got the humor in the fact that you're saying, you know what, I like the sound of the word assonance and what it could potentially mean, pointed by the fact that it didn't have the oomph for me. So it killed me, but I appreciated it at the same time. And I like that I found it with this rhyming poem, too. You know, it was like, you know what, this is a guy that takes poetry and understands poetic device and uses it to his own means, uses it for his own enjoyment, I guess is even a better way to put it. And it really felt, it felt cool in that bittersweet discovery I had at this point on this, in going through your body of work. And the other thing I want to say is, and you're going to do it later, I'm going to steal my comment from some of your later work, is I like when people objectify the poet or words in a poem or the poetry writing process, because it means to me, like what you talked about before, it means that you're always a poet. You're not a poet when you sit down and write. You're a poet when you're driving home from your busy day at work. You're always looking for the beauty. You're finding the poetry. You're finding the words. You're finding that juice that has your creative outlet everywhere all the time. And I like that. I like the fact that you understand, and taking my earlier part of this comment, taking device and understanding what that means for you and finding what poetry means for you and that it's always around you. I was inspired by that, and I found all of those kind of elements through reading this one poem. And it kind of, it inspired me as a fellow poet. It made me go, you know what? This is someone that really loves the craft and has made it be what he wants it to be for him. So, mm-hmm. And that's what everyone should do. So,
yeah.
Bravo.
Well,
to you.
Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks. Yeah, I do I do this solely for myself. Thanks for noticing. Yeah, thank you.
Well, and that's when it comes through, right? I mean, honestly, when someone's enjoying it, and that'll be my question to you then. Are you ever hampered, because this is a problem that I have, are you ever hampered when you're not writing for yourself? Do you ever keep the audience's reaction or the audience's thoughts in your mind when you're trying to put together work, and does that ever slow you down?
I think it has. I think that, but ultimately, no. Like, I've definitely sat down and I've wrote some real shit that I've never put out there. I never posted it, or it just sits in my drafts until it scrolls out, and then all of a sudden I can't find it anymore, or it's an amalgamation of poems, or basically it's a free writing exercise. But I just do it for me. Sorry, I think I'm muddled over your question, Jeremy. Can you repeat
that's perfectly fair. I mean, and that's the simple truth, right? And I think, again, that's the beauty. The fact that you only do it for you, I feel that. And again, even if it is a selfish craft for your own creative outlook or output, then yeah. as an audience, we feel that, and that's appreciated. So, bravo to you.
Yeah.
I like that answer.
I definitely take people's criticisms and thoughts, and I think, oh well, that really worked, and that's good. And I really always appreciate people's comments on my work. I love it when people comment on my work and they say, hey, I didn't like this, or hey, this didn't really work for me, because it's like, well then, I mean, whatever, we're all here just to learn, right? So I do always appreciate constructive criticism. Sometimes I don't agree with it, and I still say thanks, because, I mean, you always got to look at that stuff. And, I mean, I can always tell on all poetry, I can tell who's a reader and who's not. And I'm not by any stretch a real reader per se. I can tell that Pam has read a lot in her life. I can tell that others are very well read just in the way that they write. My poems end up being a lot more crafting and probably a lot more editing than the average poet. So that's my pledge to myself. I'm going to read more.
Fair enough. Let's continue that reading with your next poem. It is on the boards, ready for your recitation.
Okay, for Lexi. My dog is slower now, so I take her off leash more often. Her path shaped more and more like a slackened thread. Now there are deeper smells. Slow, sober investigations. A gentler, seasoned focus as she attends the mysteries within clumps of a blurry earth. I walk ahead, trying to lead her on to what she's missing, but she knows this ruse. At times, she'll come bounding in mawkish fashion back towards me, only to stop and turn, perhaps gauging her performance. But more often now I am waiting, while she nuzzles the wild rye, breathes in strange footprints, searches over the field. And beyond, through the blue sage, and farther, the dark green fir, where the sun becomes tangled, writing poems on the clouds. I turn back to view the night shade its way down the eastern hills, silent as time, and there is my girl waiting patiently. Sometimes it's she who watches me. End poem.
And there it is. That's exactly what I was talking about the last time, writing poems in the clouds. That's where I was alluding to the fact that, you're always trying to find those poetry in everyday life. And what I really liked about this one is, yeah, it's about your love for your dog. But the end makes it go a little bit further. That's where the spice was it for this one, for me on this one, is sometimes it's she who's watching me. It's that self-reflection and realizing that, you know what, I'm getting older too. And someday I'm going to be able to succumb and be going, succumb to aging, the aging process. So really, you could take this whole poem as more of an autobiographical feeling. I thought that little nug that you put at the end of this thing was the twist that really took this one to a different level for me. Because I've done the same. I mean, I've had dogs in my past. I love my dogs. I've written about my dogs when they passed, mainly because I wanted to capture their spirit, and I wanted to remember for myself how much I loved them and always have that connection. But for this one, I think that you were doing that in a lot of ways in this poem, but you were also saying, you know what, this is also about me, and I hope that someone loves me as much. So that was my kind of takeaway on this one. I think there's a subtle twist there at the end. And then my question for you is, your author note, you talk about a dry spell. Can you talk about how you wrestle with the dreaded writer's block and how you battle through it?
Yeah, I don't. You know what? Honestly, Jeremy, I stopped wrestling lately. I haven't been writing poems, which kind of disturbs me a bit. But it, you know what? It just honestly comes and goes. And I'm at the point I'm not going to beat on myself for a dry spell. I know there's, you know, I feel the poems coming up within me, and I come up with great lines, but it doesn't always seem to be a lot of time in life to write poetry, and that's just kind of the reality of things. So that's okay, but they're in there, and you know, there's drafts. They'll come by. It's giving yourself time and space. And when the mood strikes me, I can always write. So that's life takes over sometimes. That's just the reality of my circumstance, and that's okay.
No, and buddy, I'm the exact same way. I mean, Hunter S. Thompson said, I'm a bit of a binge writer, and that's what it is. When the feeling hits me, I sit down and have to write that day at that time. But I go through dry spells myself, so yeah, I feel you. But in the strong words of my good friend Pam Ray, you gotta make the time. You're an incredibly talented poet, and so I hope that you keep with your craft and keep them coming, because this little deep dive that we're doing tonight has given me a wonderful appreciation for your craft. And I think you need to keep at it, because there's a lot of talent in all this.
Thanks.
Pam,
well, I mean, I still love
ahead.
It.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
Pam, your thoughts?
Oh, this is wonderful. I really like what you had to say, Jeff, about how you don't beat yourself up if you go through a dry spell for writing. And I don't think you should. I think too many people jump to a conclusion of what is writer's block. Like, maybe you just need to take time away and, you know, not beat yourself up. I really like, and I have to agree that with Jeremy, that this speaks not only on your love for your dog and is very relatable, but, you know, on the aging process. But I also feel like, to me, and maybe it's because I am a mother, but, you know, it speaks on parenting, the whole idea that there are those time periods in your children's lives, especially when they're toddlers and really young, where you keep an extremely close eye on them. and then you let them more and more, like, you know, just be out there on their own, giving them that little bit more freedom. And it kind of brings me back to Jeremy's comment and to the first poem you read tonight about your mother, whereas that poem talked about at one point you're the child being taken care of, you know, and then the next you're doing the caring. And here it's the same idea, but kind of in reverse, in the idea that sometimes you're taking care of your child who's your dog, and sometimes your child is taking care of you. I have to say, I definitely smiled at times she'll come bounding in mawkish fashion back towards me, only to stop and turn, perhaps gauging her performance. You know, they do that. You just, to me, capture a dog's personality so well in that stanza, and I really enjoyed this poem.
Thanks, Tim.
Now, Jeff,
oh,
this is the point where...
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Well, now I want to find out how Jeff got started in poetry.
You know, I think I wrote the first decent poem I wrote, I thought, well, this year for Christmas, I'm not going to go buy a Christmas gift. I'm going to write a poem and frame it and give it away. So I wrote a poem, and I don't even know. I think it's on my set list here. Yeah, it's the last one on the set list. I wrote that poem, I don't know, 15 years ago or so, and had it framed. And
we'll have to make sure to get to that one.
Yeah, had it framed and gave it to my sister. So that was, I guess that was my first poem.
Cool.
That's very cool. Yeah, we got to make sure, Pam, that we get to that one. Please remind me so we don't miss that one. So this is your opportunity, Jeff, to selflessly promote yourself. Can we find you anywhere else besides AP? Do you have anything published? Do you have any other ways we can get a hold of your work?
No, it's all there on AP, or chat me on AP and I'll send you a copy. No, I'm not published. Some people have been bugging me that I should look into writing and publishing a book, but I'm still paying a mortgage and still working 9 hours a day and doing all that stuff. So I haven't got there yet, but lots of life left. So.
Well, Pam and I gave the same rap to our good friend Self-Rising Mojo last week. It is incredibly easy with zero cost to self-publish on Amazon. I've done it a couple times. I know Pam has experience. There's tons of people on this site. It's always extremely satisfying to be able to hold your own book, so I highly recommend that you check it out because I would love to buy one of your books. So it costs you nothing. It takes a little bit of time. But like I said, there's tons of people on the site that can walk you through the process. It's very easy.
Oh, well, thanks, man. Don't worry. It's in the back of my mind. It's that might come after home renovations. 28 other things. So, yeah.
Yeah. My honey-do list is never-ending as well, my friend. I know exactly how you feel. But it's cool. It's extremely gratifying. Self-gratifying to be able to hold your own work in your own hands. I know it's cool to be on the site. You get all the comments, but to be able to hold your own book, it's very cool. So reach out if you need help with it because, I think you're very talented. And the little story that you gave us about presenting your sister with a poem is cool. And when I was able to hand people my own book and say, hey, look, and give them a wink, it's a cool feeling. So something to consider.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, Jeremy. That's awesome. I'm always I'm in awe of it, of you guys on the site that do publish your own stuff. That's fantastic, and I also think most of you are far more talented than I am. So,
untrue, my friend, untrue. Your next one out there in the dark is for Spanky, and it's ready to read.
Okay, yeah, we're going through the pets now. Out there in the dark for Spanky. I hear them from the kitchen window. out there in the dark, ticking and tumbling across the black yard. Last year's leaves fall to the corners, chant about the wind, or loss, or maybe nothing. You are sleeping, I suppose, framed by the cedars in the shed, beneath the apple trees, their blossoms the bright ghosts of birds. So different how we saw the world, fields of earth, the scrolling sky you never questioned. And night, the darkness, was yours. Slipping in shadow, you craved it, your calling, your craft. These same leaves sang to you last summer. Soft wind in the blackness, the crickets in the clouded moon. But now they only chant, like I sometimes chant, staring from the kitchen window upon the night. End poem.
You know what, I always like odes because I know they're personal, right? I mean, I know what this means to you. And really, that's all I want to hear. That's my question. Can you tell me a little bit more about this relationship and what the impetus for this poem was?
Oh, just our cat Spanky. He got old, and we had to put him down. So this is the place where my wife and I are now. This is our first home, and we I buried my cat in my backyard. So he rests out there underneath the, and I miss him. He was a fantastic cat. He survived an attack by an owl in our last house before coming here. And he deserved a poem. So there it was.
I really like that. I really like that. He deserved a poem. Cool. Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is beautifully written. I like your attention to detail with imagery, how so oftentimes you bring in different types of trees. Like here you have, you are sleeping, I suppose, framed by the cedars in the shed beneath the apple trees, their blossoms, the bright ghosts of birds. I felt like this was a wonderful dedication to your cat. And and very subtly, to me, had the thought of the idea that pets do go to heaven, you know, even though it wasn't directly said. There was something about those lines that felt that way. I like how, you know, even though this was written, from what I understand, after your cat had died, there was a sense of their spirit still being alive. And the cats are very so independent, always oftentimes exploring. And I really like so different how we saw the world, field of earth, the scrolling sky you never questioned, and night, the darkness was yours. It's always to me the funniest thing when cats look like all of a sudden they see ghosts, and you got to ask, you know, the way their eyes look. But this is, yeah, beautifully written all the way through, and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Great comment, Pam. When you, I put a Pam poem up there. I'm not going to have you rest. Recite a Pam poem.
I would love to.
Well, then you'll have to call into another show.
That's okay. Right. Hold on.
Okay,
I think I got the right one up. Okay, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Sorry, guys. Having troubles with my computer. Give me one sec. No, I lost my window here.
It's okay, because during these downtimes, we take the opportunity to have Pam fill in some song. Pam, would you like to go ahead and sing something for us?
No. But
one of these days. Okay. This would have been a great day to have you sing.
Funky Cool Medina.
Yeah. Okay, guys, I found her. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Okay, this is We Are Here. I'd tell you, but you were there that morning. The sky was a haiku of a fish with 100 ribs, late autumn thumbing photos of the spring, when meadowlarks sang our same depth of tight shoes in valley sands, sun slow burning, our chapters like jacks ungathered, our town by the river's hand seeping under the rib, men battle echoes from walls, tired women at the empty stop, and each child walks tightrope through grass on the shoulders of the world. Salt is enough of empty years and modest amends kept unspoiled. In silence we pass broken payphones where some still stand. We are billions alone, lest we read the sky in braille. And ascending the cellar of sleep, I'm now dying each sunrise, or some stranger turning off my street to begin where dawn leaves its perch near the water. End poem.
This one's amazing. Pam, you get to start.
All right. Yeah, I have to agree. This one is absolutely amazing. I really like in the beginning where you say that morning the sky with a haiku of a fish with 100 ribs, and salt is enough of empty years and modest amens kept unspoiled in silence and past broken payphones where some still stand. You know, I like that this, you create a nostalgic feel like this, with especially with the mention of like our chapters like jacks ungathered. You know, I don't even think kids nowadays play with jacks. You know, and broken payphones, you don't even see those anymore. You know, you bring us through time and through history, but at the same time, paint a picture of a moment remembered between two people. And boy, I would really love to be able to ask you another question, but it is getting to the end of the night, and I am afraid my brain is just short-circuiting. But you know what I'll do is if all of a sudden, isn't it? Because I want to have here I have Jeff 1969 on a show. I can ask him all kinds of questions, and my brain is short-circuiting. But I figure what I can do is I can just message him later and say, hey, I thought of that question I wanted to ask you.
That's quite all right, Pam.
And it's funny that 2 o'clock where you are.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, Wednesdays are long days for Pam. So, and we even made her headline tonight, so I know that she's probably burning out. But that's quite all right, Pam. We're so happy to have you. No, it's funny that you mentioned that line, too, because that was what I picked up on. In Valleys of Sin, the chapters like Jack's Ungathered, that was the one piece that I really cued in on, too. I really like that. And also I like We Are Billions Alone, Lest We Read the Sky in Braille, which is such a cool thought, to be able to touch the stars and read how that would translate or how that would be words, something to communicate about. And that's how it used to be, right? If you think about the past, how sailors used to go, how you would read the sky. And I love the fact, I've never thought of that. I like how you take Braille with stars. I mean, it's touching your environment. It's a common theme on everything that we've celebrated tonight about your work. You're taking your surroundings and you're enjoying it in a way that my mind doesn't go. And I'm envious of it. As we read this, I'm envious of it because I want to live in a world where I see poetry everywhere the way you do. I want to embrace the beauty and then be able to put it down in words. And so I don't know. I'm kind of in awe on this one. I really like the way that you do that. My question to you, and it's kind of an off-kilter question, because I think a lot of times when you talk about emotional connection with words and what poets try to do, a lot of times there's a lot of reference to lyrics and to music. And you have made zero reference to that tonight. And I'm wondering how much of an impact that has or how much of an influence music is to your writing process.
I'm not sure that music, I love music, and I love artists with great lyrics. Some of the like Bruce Coburn, a lot of artists like him. I think his lyrics and his songs are just Cat Stevens. They're fantastic poetry in my mind. And I just even reading the lyrics or listening along to them, that's another facet of poetry, you know, poetry set to music, and I'm in awe of people like that that can write like that. So in that way, they just inspire me to pursue my own craft, I guess. As far as music or tune inspiring me, I don't know that really happens. I think music is just kind of another thing that I appreciate. I play guitar. Well, I have a guitar and I don't pick it up much anymore. But I've never really tried to write songs. I think I'm pretty much set in loving free verse and how thoughts are conveyed through it. So music, I don't think that really comes into play for me much. Bird song, maybe.
Which is fair. I don't know, Cat. Do you mean Yosef Islam? Is that who you're referring to? Not Cat Stevens?
Yeah, Yosef. or other name. Yeah, Yosef. That's right.
I love Cat Stevens. No, and I love Bruce Coburn. Now, that's really cool. It's cool that it's funny that you... It's the spirit. Again, what I said in your first poem, it's the tone. And so I was just interested in what kind of your influences were for music. And the fact that you can own a guitar, I wouldn't have even known that, because I feel like your writing style is totally separate and outside of any kind of lyrical or musical feel. I was just curious on some of your inspiration. So you answered it very amply, my friend.
Yeah, I like vocals. So if that filters in, that's definitely there for sure. I love guitar and voice together for sure.
Yeah, no, I get that feel. No, I get that connection, that feel. No, very true. And I wanted to make sure that we got this one tonight before we sign off. So here is the poem that we talked about earlier, ready for you to read.
Okay, man. Here we go. This one is for Mary, I guess. Fisherman's Interlude. I rest atop God's earthen stage and sun myself in growing light while I dream of time before I came and breathed and spoke and walked upright. Endless symphonies of changes, day and darkness, flicker, throw. I spelled darkness wrong there. Molding, mixing, ceaseless ages, mountains come and oceans go. Tales too old to comprehend have been regaled beneath my frame. Bits of sand the earth now lends for eons of dawns where earth untamed. As windborne leaf adorns my arm, the sky around me smiles and soars. The leaf was once my father's tears. The tree will be my boat and oars. End poem.
That's very cool. And you know what? I'm usually a sucker for every inch of a poem, a sucker for every spelling, every comma, every move in a poem has to be deliberate. And I like the fact, I didn't even catch it until you just said it, that darkness was spelled incorrectly. And I kind of like the fact that it's darkness. I mean, does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Sure.
Because I think bumps and bruises, I hate ignorant bumps and bruises. But in this poem, in this instance, in this rhyming format, I really dig the fact that it says darkness. I don't want that to be my takeaway, but I think that's really kind of cool. Do you want to talk about, tell me the story about, what was the reaction? I mean, it was a gift. Can you give us a little bit more of the background of what happened when you presented her to this poem?
Oh, she loves her younger brother, so she loved it. So, yeah. That was the reaction was good. She thought it was great, and that I found it inspiring for sure.
Very cool,
yeah.
Man. And very sweet sentiment to share your love for art and then give it as a gift. I really like that. Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. I think it was a wonderful, heartfelt gift. I think when you publish your first book, you should make sure this poem is in here. It's funny because I have no doubt that your sister appreciated this, but we definitely do learn as adults how to hide our expressions of disappointment when given gifts.
Yeah.
But, you know, and this is wonderful all the way through. And it's another one. Like, I really feel like for some reason, like this last couple of poems or so, you have, and in your poetry in general, you do have this gift to interweave between a longer extension, a broader spectrum of time, and being in the moment. And because my brain isn't capable of thinking of anything individually, I'll just steal one of Jeremy's questions earlier, which is, what do you consider to be good poetry?
Poetry moves me. Good poetry makes me think. Good poetry makes me go, oh, wow. Yeah, I never thought of it that way before. Or like in your case, good poetry is you give such great voice to things. So giving something a voice, shedding light on something, finding a new metaphor for something that's really apt, you know, not just a metaphor for the sake of being a metaphor, something that's like, yeah, that really is that. That's good poetry to me.
Very cool.
And really, that's the key. I mean, that's what I always, always say. Because a lot of my bullshit, people can't read, and they go, what's the point? I don't understand. Explain it to me. Good poetry, it's exactly what you said. Good poetry is what moves me. And
yep.
Really, that's the beginning, middle, and end. Something that connects with a person, as an author myself, as a poet myself, that's what I try to do. I try to connect with people. And I feel like you've done that tonight. I think you've inspired me to a different level, which is why we even have this show, is to understand where you're coming from with your poetry and do a deeper dive. And I feel like you have a lot of heart in what you do. And you do connect. You do connect with a new reader like myself. And I can only encourage you to continue. I mean, Jeff, 1969, everyone, is here on All Poetry. We didn't get through his entire set list, but he has a lot to offer. And he will continue to publish on AP and look for his self-published book any day now on Amazon.com.
Following and, the renovation, you got her.
And, of course, as always, Pam Ray joined us. She joined us tonight as a headliner. She is a diamond in the rough. I tease her a lot, but it's only because I love her. She's an incredible poet, and I recommend that everyone read everything that she writes. I'll give you guys both a chance to sign off if you'd like. Jeff, would you like to say goodnight to the people?
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks to everybody listening, and thanks so much, Jeremy and Pam, for all you guys do for LNP and AP. You're both a real treasure. Pam, it was an honor to be here and listen to you read your poetry. That's really cool when you get to hear somebody read your poetry. So, and yours is fantastic. And just thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate your time and effort.
Yeah, no, Jeff, it was a pleasure to meet you virtually, and thank you for joining us. And Pam, sign us off.
All right. Well, great show tonight, Jeremy. Always an honor and a pleasure to hang out with you. Thank you to everyone listening to the show who now or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. Thank you to Jeff for calling in and joining us. Thank you to Fill My Eyes, you know, and to everybody who contributes to all the shows. You are all so wonderful. Thank you. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.